intemperate supper, he retired to rest, and the next morning the Emperor Jovian was found dead in his bed. The cause of this sudden death was variously understood. By some it was ascribed to the consequences of an indigestion, occasioned either by the quantity of the wine or the quality of the mushrooms which he had swallowed in the evening. According to others, he was suffocated in his sleep by the vapour of charcoal which extracted from the walls of the apartment the unwholesome moisture of the fresh plaster. But the want of a regular inquiry into the death of a prince, whose reign and person were soon forgotten, appears to have been the only circumstance which countenanced the malicious whispers of poison and domestic guilt.
Following the death of Jovian, the purple mantle fell to Valentinian, a soldier who rapidly elevated his brother Valens to the title of Augustus, dividing the empire once more into west and east. With Valentinian ruling the west from AD 364 to AD 375, and Valens the east between AD 364 and AD 378.
When this important business had been amicably transacted, Valentinian and Valens embraced for the last time. The Emperor of the West established his temporary residence at Milan, and the Emperor of the East returned to Constantinople to assume the dominion of 50 provinces, of whose language he was totally ignorant. The most honourable circumstance of the character of Valentinian is the firm and temperate impartiality which he uniformly preserved in an age of religious contention. His strong sense, unenlightened but uncorrupted by study, declined with respectful indifference the subtle questions of theological debate. The government of the earth claimed his vigilance and satisfied his ambition. And while he remembered that he was the disciple of the church, he never forgot that he was a sovereign of the clergy. Under the reign of an apostate, he had signalized his zeal for the honor of Christianity. He allowed to his subjects the privilege which he had assumed for himself, and they might accept with gratitude and confidence the general toleration which was granted by a prince addicted to passion, but incapable of fear or of disguise. The pagans, the Jews, and all the various sects which acknowledged the divine authority of Christ were protected by the laws from arbitrary power or popular insult. Nor was any mode of worship prohibited by Valentinian, except those secret and criminal practices which abuse the name of religion for the dark purposes of vice and disorder. The art of magic, as it was more cruelly punished, was more strictly proscribed. But the emperor admitted a formal distinction to protect the ancient methods of divination, which were approved by the Senate and exercised by the Tuscan haruspices. He had condemned, with the consent of the most rational pagans, the license of nocturnal sacrifices. But he immediately admitted the petition of Praetextatus, proconsul of Achaia, who represented that the life of the Greeks would become dreary and comfortless if they were deprived of the invaluable blessing of the Eleusinian mysteries. Philosophy alone can boast, and perhaps it is no more than the boast of philosophy, that her gentle hand is able to eradicate from the human mind the latent and deadly principle of fanaticism. But this truce of 12 years, which was enforced by the wise and vigorous government of Valentinian, by suspending the repetition of mutual injuries, contributed to soften the manners and abate the prejudices of the religious factions.
The weak and feeble Valens was quickly challenged by a tribune named Procopius, who was related to the former emperor, Julian. For a short time, confusingly enough, Procopius was even acclaimed emperor between AD 365 and AD 366 in Constantinople. He was equally rapidly deserted by his supporters, captured by troops loyal to Valens, and unceremoniously beheaded.
We should turn with horror from the frequent executions which disgraced, both at Rome and Antioch, the reign of the two brothers. Valens was of a timid and Valentinian of a choleric disposition. An anxious regard to his personal safety was the ruling principle of the administration of Valens. The favourites of Valens obtained, by the privilege of rapine and confiscation, the wealth which his economy would have refused. They urged with persuasive eloquence that in all cases of treason, suspicion is equivalent to proof, that the power supposes the intention of mischief, that the intention is not less criminal than the act, and that a subject no longer deserves to live if his life